Let me encourage you to open your Bibles back up to Revelation chapter 3, and we'll begin there this morning. Appreciate everyone being here. Appreciate the song selections by Paul. And we are going to be talking about the subject of clothing, the idea of modesty from a biblical perspective. And as we consider that topic this morning, you know, in Revelation chapter 3, we have this figurative usage of the idea of clothing, but I think it works very well, and we'll return to that as we come to the conclusion of our lesson later this morning. But he says in verse 17, "You say, because you say, I am rich and have become wealthy and have need of nothing, and you do not know that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. And I advise you to buy from me gold refined by fire, that you may become rich, and white garments, that you may clothe yourself, and that the shame of your nakedness will not be revealed, and eye salve to anoint your eyes so that you may see." That idea of people who don't understand how they look to God. You know, they have a picture of how they look to the world and how they look to themselves, their own evaluation. And Jesus is coming in and saying, you have a completely distorted view of this. And the reality is opposite of maybe the world's view and your own view. And so we need to come to God. That's the whole point of coming to His Word, is coming to the mirror of His Word and seeing what the reflection looks like, the comparison. What do I look like in comparison to His words, to His standard? And nowhere is that more important, I think, than this subject, especially in a modern context. We are so far removed from some of the considerations that the Bible has to offer. Those considerations are not there culturally, as they have been from time to time throughout history. Never have they been universally accepted, but sometimes they are far more culturally accepted than they are now. Even if those standards are not the same as the Scriptures, at least the notion is there from time to time. So far removed is it that the idea of clothing is talked about even by God's people as if it's a matter of indifference to God. Like he doesn't really care about that. It's not a big deal. I want to suggest to you, it is a big deal. In fact, it's been a big deal from the time of the very first sin. From the very beginning, when God addresses man's first sin, clothing is part of the equation. And it's a matter of addressing sin, both literally and, of course, also as we see in Revelation and in Genesis 3 that we'll look at, figuratively as well. I want to address three areas that I think God's Word talks about clothing and what we should consider about those three areas. Three purposes. Why do you wear clothes? Here are three purposes that God lays out for that. And that is the idea of covering ourselves, covering our shame, our nakedness, the idea of communication, what are we saying with our clothes, and then the idea of convention or propriety. And so we'll think about those, and really in that order, I think, as far as importance goes. And so to begin with, the idea of covering, going back to Genesis chapter 3. In Genesis chapter 3, it is striking and important, I think, to see how clothing comes into the conversation in the first place. So there is no clothing before Genesis chapter 3, right? So the end of Genesis chapter 2, the man and his wife were both naked and they were not ashamed. And naked there, as indicated by the continuance of the story, means literally nothing on. All right? And so as we continue to read through the story, we find that Eve takes the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, and Adam takes with her. And the eyes, in verse 7, the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loin coverings. Then we come down to verse 21, and we find that God has come into the picture. They've had their back and forth. God has issued the consequences, the curse that comes as a result of the sin. But in verse 21, it says, the Lord made garments of skin for Adam and Eve and his wife and clothed or covered them. So that's the first consideration. Let me just suggest to you that I believe most people know that's the most important consideration. And before you think of anything else, the first thing that we ought to think of is, am I covered? I would illustrate that most people know this. You might think, well, it looks like a lot of people don't know it. No, I think they do. Because any time someone is in a circumstance, let's say you're in a circumstance where you have no clothes on and someone walks in the door, what is the first thought that comes to mind? I guarantee it has nothing to do with fashionability. You don't care what you're about to put on. You don't care if it's a piece of cardboard, if it's the curtains, whatever. I just need something in between me and you so that you don't see my shame, my nakedness. Everybody thinks that. Now, not everybody thinks in terms of what all we would want to have covered in order to take away that shame. But almost everyone thinks in terms of something ought to be covered, and that is the first, foremost, primary consideration of clothing. It's man's first consideration, right? When he realizes his nakedness, his first thing is, I gotta put something on. It's not sufficient, but at least it's something. Let's start there. Then God comes in and says, let me finish what you started. You made an attempt to cover. It was insufficient. And so God comes in and completes the job, the role of clothing, that is to cover their nakedness. An additional thing that we learn there from Genesis chapter 3 is that minimal coverage is insufficient. And so I just pointed that out, that Adam and Eve said, let's cover something up. And what do they cover? In Genesis chapter 3 and verse 10, it tells us, he said, backing up there, it says they made for themselves loin coverings. And so essentially the loins would generally refer to the reproductive areas. And so what we would commonly call the private areas of our body, private parts. But it says in verse 10 that Adam, when he heard God, it says, I heard the sound of you in the garden and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid myself. So Adam himself at this point realizes the insufficiency of the minimal clothing that he has provided for himself. I think most people know this as well, right? I think depending on the context, people understand when they're not covered enough most often. And that's illustrated when you change the environment. So the nature, maybe the nature of the clothing. When people are at the beach, they very rarely wear more than, in fact, sometimes not even as much as what they would wear as undergarments. And yet those same people, if they were seen in their undergarments, generally would blush. They would try to cover more of their body, say, I don't want you to see me in my underwear. But then they'll go out covered in less than their underwear. Another example is when you see people at the pool or at the beach and let a young lady catch a man looking at her whose attention she does not want. And all of a sudden she will realize not enough of me is covered. Like, it's fine for the general public to look, but maybe that guy's got a little bit different look in his eye. Maybe he looks a little bit more creepy, so I want to cover up more of myself. And they understand this is not enough. And yet, there's that inconsistency. This is not something we give a lot of thought to. And generally, when we go buy clothes or put on clothes in the morning, these are not things that are going through our minds. But at some level, they ought to be going through our minds. Well, as far as what ought to be covered, we get some information, but not very much, and certainly no definitive information in Genesis chapter 3. Some people would appeal to definitions of a tunic, and they are helpful. We refer to tunics today. They're generally garments that go from about the shoulders to the knees, but that's not definitive. There's more specific and helpful information as we go through the rest of the scriptures. God has told us what he wants covered on occasion. He's specified. He specified in one instance what he wants covered in the garments of the priest, for instance. Over in Exodus chapter 28, and we've gone over these verses before, but looking again, Exodus 28 and verse 42, you shall make for them linen breeches to cover their bare flesh. That bare flesh is the same word that's translated nakedness throughout most of the Old Testament. They shall reach from the loins even to the thighs. Now, when we look at that verse, sometimes I get some pushback on that. You know, you're taking laws from the Old Testament and applying them to the New. You're trying to say we should dress like priests dress like the Old Testament people dress. It's not at all what I'm saying. In fact, we're going to talk about the rest of the priest's dress in a little while and show that we're not looking to dress like the priest. That's not at all the point. The point is that as God tells the priest what to wear, in many instances, he tells them why he wants them to wear it. And in this case, he says, wear this so that your nakedness will be covered. And while some of the other things that the priests wear and the reasons for those things don't apply to us, covering nakedness does still apply to us. And so when God says, here, do this for this reason, and that's still a reason I want to fulfill, then I need to go about wearing clothing that will do the same thing. Now, they don't have to be made of linen or breeches or whatever else you might put in there, but they do have to cover the same part. Another objection that people will make is that really the idea of thigh is one that we can't really wrap our heads around. It's not consistent. But the word here is consistently translated thigh throughout most of the Old Testament. These are not people who are ignorant of body parts. They know how to communicate with one another about what body parts that they're talking about. And so in this instance, the idea is to cover up the thigh. So God told them to cover that up. In other instances, what God does is talk about something that's uncovered and then describes that as nakedness. So that's not really the same as identical as the instruction, do cover that up, but it gives us, what it's doing is helping us define it, right? As we're looking through the Bible and God says, here is someone with these body parts uncovered, and then that means they're naked. Okay, we can kind of put those together. We can add those to our definition. In Isaiah chapter 47, Isaiah 47 and in verse 2, it says, take the millstones and grind meal, remove your veil, strip off the skirt, uncover the leg, cross the rivers. Your nakedness will be uncovered. Your shame will be exposed. I will take vengeance and will not spare a man. And so, here again, we have the leg, and certainly we combine that with Exodus chapter 28, the thigh portion of the leg being uncovered means your nakedness is exposed. And he connects that here to shame. Now, somebody says, that's figurative. It is. It is. But it's figurative language using understood concepts in reality, right? So this is a figure that wouldn't make sense if exposing your leg was not shameful, right? So for somebody to be able to say, I'm going to lift your skirt up and that's going to bring shame, somebody would have to understand that on the receiving end, right? If lifting up the skirt is not shameful and does not expose nakedness in literal terms, then this is a figure of speech that means nothing. So it has to be based on real things in order for the figure to even make sense. So we can use figures of speech in order to get at the definition of nakedness in this case. Over in the book of Ezekiel, Ezekiel chapter 16, and again, we're using much figurative language here. Ezekiel chapter 16 and verse 6. It says, when I passed by you and saw you squirming in your blood. Now, if you back up, you see that it's the blood of infancy. They've just been born. All right. And he's talking to the nation as a whole. So obviously figurative language. I saw you squirming in your blood and I said to you while you were in your blood, live. Yes, I said to you while you were in your blood, live. And I made you numerous like the plants of the field. But then you grew up and became tall and reached the age for fine ornaments. And then here he says, your breasts were formed. Your hair had grown and yet you were naked and bare. And so we've We covered the nakedness of the lower portion of the body, the thighs being considered naked, and here we add the chest portion. Your breasts have formed, and your hair had grown. And again, that would be hair in the loin area, as he's referencing the growth process here. And he says, but you're uncovered. In those areas, you're uncovered. You don't have any clothes on. And so I'm going to come in, and I'm going to put clothes on. I'm going to cover those areas that need to be covered. Now, I fully understand that Ezekiel is not taking a moment to give us specific instruction about modesty. I know that's not the point of Ezekiel 16, and that that's not the point of Isaiah 47, but it instructs us about those things, right? If I was teaching a class on Ezekiel, I wouldn't say, here's what chapter 16 is about. It's about, make sure you cover up these body parts. But when you read that, then you can know something more about nakedness. And so we cover up, and so it does fulfill that definition that is generally seen in lexicons about the tunic, that we're covering up the areas from the shoulders to the knees, covering up the chest area down to the thighs. When people start asking questions about that, like, right, where's the line? How much, you know, at what point do you start saying that that is actual exposure of the body part that's supposed to be covered up? I think in terms of how are we looking at that exposure? Are we considering the shame of it? Are we considering what it represents and what it says about what we think about, what God says about that, and how we communicate that to others? Are we taking him seriously in our care about covering ourselves? If, we have a lot of different takes on what doctors have said over the last year and about precautions and about how people take that. But if it could be demonstrably proven that exposure of the thigh would 100% cause cancer, Exposure of the breasts would 100% cause cancer. If the sunlight touches those, then it's going to cause cancer. Do you suppose you would have scores of people constantly trying to find exactly where the line was? That they would say, let me see if I can get this a little bit more low cut. I'm going to keep going until I'm right at that point where I might get cancer, but I'm not sure. Or do you think you would just say, man, there's no plunging necklines in here anymore. And we don't see shorter shorts coming back into style, that people just maintain. So it's a matter of communication and a matter of thought process. You know, are you thinking in terms of how much can I reveal, or are you thinking of what does God want covered? So I want to think in terms of what does God want covered. And that pushes the line away, not as close to as possible. So, think in those terms. All right, one more thought about that before we move on to another consideration in addition to covering, is I think that there's a role for this, and I get this question somewhat frequently. I think there's a role for time and place when it comes to the appropriateness of this concept of clothing, of coverage. Over in John 21, and in verse 7, there's this story of the disciples out in the boat, and Jesus comes to the shore and is calling them in after the resurrection. And it tells us, therefore, the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." And when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put his outer garment on, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. Now that stripped is translated naked in most of your translations. In fact, in most places in the New American Standard, that word is translated naked. And so he was naked for work. But it's not naked like we would use the word. We don't mean he has no clothes on, but he doesn't have clothes that you would walk around in normal society on. He's out working on a boat with a bunch of guys. And so he doesn't have his appropriate public clothing on. And he puts on. And it is peculiar. He puts on his outer garment to jump into the ocean, which is the opposite of what we would think would be done. But that's what he does. Over in John chapter 13, that same word is used here, or the same word for garment, that Jesus, it says, got up from supper and laid aside his garments. Now, that's the same word for outer garment, right? So again, it's not Jesus taking off everything, but he's taking off his public presence garment, his outer garment, and he took the towel and girded himself. So he's also dressing for work, or undressing for the work that he's about to do. Where is he? He's in a room full of guys. And so there may be times where we see, okay, there's an appropriateness to less coverage under these circumstances. Certainly marriage would be appropriate for less coverage. You know, I grew up in a house where Nathan and I shared a room, right? So within that room, there's less coverage required in those circumstances. And I think we see some examples here, because guys wonder about that. Ladies wonder about that. Is there ever a time where it's okay, you know, in a locker room or a bunkhouse or things like that? And I think we see some indication here that there is appropriateness when you're away from public, around those of the same sex, that coverage is, that there's less coverage required. But what we want to know is, am I fulfilling in every aspect and in everyday life, do I fulfill the very first consideration that clothing ever brought to the table? Am I covered up? And not by my own standards and not by my own intuition that is gained from the world that we live in, but have I considered what God calls nakedness, and have I made sure that that is what's covered? Well, the second consideration that I would offer is that of communication, and I think that that's very important. I said that we would come back to the priest's clothing. As you look over at Exodus chapter 39, you see a very detailed description of what the priest ought to be wearing, what the high priest ought to wear, and then what the other priests and those who would work at the tabernacle ought to wear. And it's very elaborate, and it communicates lots of things. It communicates his role as intercessor for Israel. He has the names of the tribes that he bears on his shoulders on the plate as he comes before God. There are indications from the coloring. There's indications from the fineness of the gold that is woven into the cloths. There's indication of the bells that are sewed onto the bottom of his garments. And so everything like presents an element of who this man is and what he represents as he comes before the Lord on behalf of the people. Lots of things are being communicated. It's not just, let's make this thing as outrageous and as gaudy as we possibly can. But that's probably what we would think of it. If we saw it, we would think, man, you just look ridiculous. And it would in the wrong context. But in this context, it all means something. And so it's not just a display. It's to say something. And even the white garments of the priests are to say something about their role before God. So what all do clothes communicate? I think they can communicate a number of things still today. They communicate status. That is, they can communicate wealth, and they can communicate poverty. Over in James chapter 2 and in verse 2, it says, "For if a man comes into your assembly with a gold ring and dressed in fine clothes, and there also comes in a poor man in dirty clothes, and you pay special attention to the one who is wearing fine clothes, and you say, sit here in a good place, and you say to the poor man, you stand over there, or you sit down by my footstool." Now, it's not just wealth and poverty. Sometimes it's the status that goes along with, yes, wealth, but standing in a power structure, standing in a corporation, perhaps. It can be depicted in the nature of our jobs, which we'll get to a little bit more as we go on. When you go back to Exodus chapter 39, I do think that's one of the things God was trying to communicate. He's trying to communicate about his own glory when he does, and the glory of the role of the high priest when he says, I want you to hammer out fine gold, I want you to snip it up into threads, and I want you to weave that into his garment. He's saying something about that priest. This man is exalted, and he ought to be exalted. But now, is that something we want to communicate, right? Are we trying to communicate self-exaltation? And of course, we want to be very careful because there's really no instruction. There's really no permission, in fact, quite the opposite, for us to communicate self-exaltation. It also communicates office or occupation. Certainly that's the case with the priest. You would know the high priest from a distance. You would even know the priests, though their garments are less intricate and detailed, there would still be a clarity about what duty and what role that they had. We have the same thing in so many different areas. We associate certain uniforms with certain occupations. And so we know what a police officer looks like. We know what a fireman looks like. We know what military uniforms look like. We also know what, like, working in a kitchen looks like, right? There's certain uniforms that go along with that, and it sets those people apart. When you're in a Lowe's, you say, hey, there's the guy that's got the right colors on. Or you come to me, because I often get mistaken for working there, but you find that person who's got the clothes on that communicates you work here. But then there's more unofficial communications along that line. Proverbs chapter 7 and verse 10 talks about somebody who's wearing the attire of a harlot. So here's somebody that's got an occupation, and she advertises it as well. It's not as official, but it's certainly knowable enough that Solomon could write about it and expect people to know what he was talking about. Oh yes, we know what a person in that occupation would wear as well. And so this is not just from the standpoint of, you know, your corporate manager says this is the uniform that you have to wear. Sometimes just by practice, we learn what sorts of things someone wears. It communicates honor. In Matthew chapter 22, Matthew chapter 22, this story of the wedding feast, this parable that Jesus tells beginning at the beginning of the chapter, and he comes down through, he talks about inviting those, and the people did not pay attention, they didn't come, and so he sent them out to get others to come and to attend the wedding feast in the main highways. As many as you find there, invite to the wedding feast. And it says in beginning of verse 11, when the king came in and looked over the dinner guests, he saw a man there who was not dressed in wedding clothes. And he said to them, friend, how did you come in here without wedding clothes? And the man was speechless. Then the king said to the servants, bind him hand and foot and throw him into outer darkness. In that place, there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now again, obviously it's very figurative, and it's meant to communicate something about our own preparedness, our own willingness to come, but to come on the host's terms. And the idea is you didn't come showing the proper regard and respect that you ought to for the occasion. And so you will be cast out. Now, again, if I'm teaching this parable, I don't go through and say the main point Jesus is making is that you got to wear a tie on Sundays. That's not it. But in making his point, he illustrates it with an acknowledged truth that when we go somewhere, when we're invited somewhere, we want to consider the nature of the host, the honor that is due towards that host, and we want to live up to that. Now, I know that is less defined, and so there's going to be some room for thinking about that and applying that. But at least we ought to be thinking about it. Another thing that it communicates is order or orderliness. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, 1 Timothy chapter 2, where Paul instructs modesty, He uses three words there in that context. 1 Timothy chapter 2 and in verse 9, I want women, it says, to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments. So the word proper there is the word cosmos. And you may have heard that before. It's the idea of order. And in fact, it's where we get our word for the root word for cosmetology, right? Putting things in order. And I think about that from the standpoint of communicating in ourselves where our life is. You come in, and sometimes people can tell there's disarray, right? Things are not orderly. Things may be a little bit chaotic at your house this morning versus things are going in an orderly fashion. And again, I'm not saying in all of these that we're trying to communicate any of these. Sometimes I'm not trying to communicate order. Sometimes I'm, you know, if you showed up to where I was working a couple of weeks ago, a water line broke out where we were building our house, and I was working on that for about 4 or 5 hours. And if you'd have come up and said, you look a little disordered, I would say, yes, that's what I was going for, right? I was trying to communicate disorder. I'm not trying to, but that is. That's the fact of the case. What I want us to think about is, when we wear clothes, are we being certain that what our clothes do communicate is what we want to communicate? Right? I'm not making a list here. These are all the things you ought to communicate. These are things you can communicate. Are you saying what you want to say when you put your clothes on in the morning? Are you telling people things about yourself you want to tell them about yourself? Or are you communicating maybe a disjointed message? Finally, it can communicate gender. Over in Deuteronomy chapter 22, Deuteronomy 22 and in verse 5, a woman shall not wear a man's clothing, nor shall a man put on a woman's clothing, for whoever does these things is an abomination to the Lord your God. That which pertains to a man, that which pertains to a woman, some of your translations will say. Now, I think that even in the time that that's written, there would be garments that where there would be a lot of overlap. In other words, there would be gender-neutral garments, robes and so forth that you would put on. And then there would be gender-specific garments. And what he's saying is, don't take a gender-specific garment for the other gender and wear that yourself. A lot of people might go here and try to make a hard and fast case. In fact, have tried to make a hard and fast case. Women shouldn't wear pants. Men shouldn't wear dresses, and so forth. I agree that women shouldn't be trying to look like a man. And men should not be trying to look like a woman. And I think that we get in trouble if we try to get much more specific than that. In Fiji on Sundays, you walk around and almost all the men who are going to church in Fiji on Sundays are wearing a skirt. It's what they do. They're not trying to look like a woman in that case. It's not the specific garment. But again, it's what are you trying to communicate? Now, 30 years ago, if I was preaching this lesson, somebody would have looked at that point and go, well, so you're saying I can't dress up in a dress as a joke on Halloween or so forth? And I think there would have been some reasonable discussion that could be had on that. But now, it's a statement. Like, literally, there are people trying to make statements by putting on the other gender clothing and saying, you know, this is not true. There is no gender. It doesn't matter. It doesn't communicate anything. And that's just not so. If it was so, if it truly didn't communicate that, then it wouldn't be a big deal that Harry Styles is wearing a dress. But apparently it is a big deal because it's true that it does communicate gender. If you don't know who Harry Styles is, it's fine. He's a pop star. Put on a dress to show his masculinity, apparently. And It's an absurdity. And it's absurdity that's playing into the notion that none of that means anything. Again, the whole point is, when I get dressed in the morning, I need to be thinking in terms, what does this say? What does this communicate? And then think in terms, if I see somebody else wearing this, what do I think of that person? What does that communicate to me? I know that it communicates that clothes in general don't communicate as much as they have in other times and places. I read a lot of literature that depicts the early 1800s, 1700s, particularly in England. There was an adaptation of one of those novels we were watching yesterday. And the number of times, of course I'm thinking about this lesson, the number of times clothing came up. Here's a woman and she's still wearing black. It's because her husband died. And they're discussing how long is that appropriate. At what point is it appropriate for her to actually wear something that's a color other than black? We don't have those discussions. Like the next day, even the same day. We don't even all wear black to funerals anymore. And that used to be it. You go to a funeral, you wear black. There was another scene in which a woman was having a bonnet made for herself after a sweetheart had died. They weren't married, but she loved him. And she said, I want it made like this with a widow's peak. And she said, that's a widow's bonnet. She said, I know. That's what she wanted to communicate. This man that I loved, who I would have had as my husband, is dead. We don't wear bonnets, much less widow's bonnets. And I appreciated the notion that, especially at the time this is written, that clothes were very specific in what they communicated. Maybe they are less specific now, but it doesn't mean they communicate nothing. And so we need to think through that. Well, finally, convention. I think in some ways this is the least important. That's not to say it's unimportant. But as we're going down through, I want to maintain covering yourself up, number one, right? If you've got that, then the others are judgment, more in the area of judgment. That doesn't mean God hasn't guided us in that judgment and so forth. We start with cover yourself up. We want to be sure we're communicating right things, that we're representing God well in the clothes that we wear. But then finally, this idea of convention. Going back to 1 Timothy chapter 2. In 1 Timothy chapter 2 and there in verse 9. We have the word proper that we refer to, cosmos, modestly and discreetly. The idea of modesty here, and to some degree proper as well, carry the idea of evaluating and thinking about the culture that we live in and dressing in a way so as to match convention. When we talk about communication, there's a lot of overlap here. When we talk about communication, I was talking about what black clothes communicated, what a certain bonnet communicated back 200 years ago. When you think about this, you're going to have to look around and evaluate at this time and this place that I live, what is the appropriate convention? What's the appropriateness in this instance, in this affair, in that particular moment? And that's going to change. And so that's part of what the difficulty is. But again, we are trying to communicate a certain message. And so conventions are what must be evaluated in order to communicate that message. 1 Timothy chapter 2, again, verse 10 now. But rather, he says, what he wants from these women is by means of good works, as is proper for a woman making a claim to godliness. Clothe yourselves in such a way, first of all, that attention is more drawn to your good works than your clothing, but that you dress in a way that is consistent with a woman that is making a claim to godliness. What does that look like? I guarantee you it looks different now than it did 2,000 years ago. It looks different now than it did 200 years ago. But that doesn't mean we can't arrive at any sort of picture. You know, I in talking about this, 20 years ago. I was studying with a group of teenagers, and they were struggling with this. How do you know? And I said, okay, do you know any godly people? One of the guys had said, could I get an earring? I said, name me 5 men who you hold up as spiritual leaders. He named off the 5 men. I said, what do you think they would say about you getting an earring? And he said, well, obviously no. And I said, obviously. It is obvious. Right? And so here, a lot of times we sort of introduce the notion here of like, we just can't interpret, and we can't figure things out, and we don't know what we're supposed to wear and when. But then you start asking questions about godly people that you know, and what do they do, and what would they do, and what would they say? And all of a sudden it's like, well, yeah, I mean, I know what they would say. Okay. So we can start putting a picture together, and we can get an idea as to how we ought to associate with the conventions that we live among. We want to balance, though, here. We're balancing standing out and fitting in. There is a sense in which we're trying to get along in the society we live in, and especially in so much as we can bring Christ to those people. We're not trying to be different for the sake of being different. And when Paul talks about becoming all things to all men, he does so with that very balance. 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and in verse 20, where he says, to the Jews I became as a Jew so that I might win Jews. To those who are under the law as under the law, though not being myself under the law, so that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without law, as without law, though not being without the law of God, but under the law of Christ, so that I might win those who are without law. Not as being without law of God. Paul doesn't say I just throw out all the rules. We maintain rules. But we're also living in this world. And we're buying clothes in this world. And we're wearing those clothes in this world. And it's okay if you go to work and you work somewhere where they do require uniform. And lo and behold, you look like everybody else when you go to work. That's okay. Unless they're asking you to uncover yourself. But there's nothing wrong with communicating, I am a worker. And I'm a worker at this place. Or I am a police officer. Or whatever the case is. It's okay to communicate that. What's not okay to communicate, and what it's not okay to uncover, is what God has said is nakedness. And it's not okay to communicate something that says, I am associated and I am in league with the people who have rebelled against God in this world. That I'm fighting against God with my clothing. I think about that in the way that the world talks about clothing. Very personal. Clothing is about you saying who you are, right? It's telling the world. It's unique, and it's to you, and it's very personal, and nobody can tell you what to wear. But God can. And I think sometimes we sort of take that messaging from the world, where the world is saying, hey, look, express yourself. I don't want to express myself. I want to express godliness. Him. He is what I want people to see in me. And I don't mean that means go around wearing a robe like they would have in the first century. What it means is in the century that we live in and in the country we live in, we're going to look conventional. Right? We're going to look traditional. We're not going to be trendsetters. In many ways, ironically, we're going to be trend followers, right? And we're going to lag behind. You're going to end up dressing like your father 30 years after you got out of high school because you're following the trends from 30 years ago. We're just lagging behind. And that's okay. People say, you just dress so normal. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm going for. Just so normal. But not normal in that there are boundaries I will not cross. There are lengths to which I will not go. We have long, as a society, traded in function for form. There is a place for form, as we've suggested. But I think these are some simple and fundamentally important questions that we need to be asking before we put on anything every single day. Am I covered? Am I saying what I want to say? And is this respectable and appropriate clothing? And we need to be asking, I think, in that order. These are God's instructions. They do require some consideration of the conventions and traditions of men, but even that is by God's instruction. God is the one telling you to evaluate that. Coming back to Genesis chapter 3 then, and in conjunction with Revelation 3. Adam and Eve attempted to cover their nakedness, to cover their shame, to cover their sin. They failed. God comes in and he's able to accomplish what they are not. And making garments of skin for Adam and his wife, he clothed them. Isn't that what he's telling the Laodiceans? You are trying to do this on your own. You've got your own wealth. You've got your own eye salve. You've got your own clothing. And I'm telling you, come to me. Because that's where you'll find out about real wealth. That's where you'll find out about real clothing. And I think in this case, both literal and figurative. That's where we find out about it. When we clothe ourselves by his guidance, it is part of a broader notion that we are accepting that we cannot cover ourselves. Without him, we're not even sure what needs covering. And so I hope that you might yield not only in this, but in every aspect of your life to his guidance. And if there's any way that we might help you do that this morning, won't you come forward while we stand and while we sing?